Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this meeting of the Kingborough Council on the 5th of July 2021. I would like to declare the council meeting open and welcome everyone in attendance. And I wish to advise that our meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. So in accordance with council's policy, I will ask the General Manager to confirm the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed.
Thank you, General Manager. Also, just for those listening at home, I'll remind my colleagues to speak into the microphone. Apparently, we need about a hand's width distance between our mouths and the microphone for the people watching the live stream to hear us. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respect to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. In attendance tonight, we have Councillor Sue Bastone, Councillor Gideon Cordova, Councillor Flora Fox, Councillor David Grace, Councillor Amanda Midgley, Councillor Christian Street, Councillor Steve Woss, Councillor Paula Reet, and myself, Councillor Joe Westwood. From our staff, we have our General Manager, Mr. Gary Arnold, Director of Engineering Services, Mr. David Reeve, Director of Environment, Development and Community, Dr. Katrina Stevenson, Acting Director, Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr. Scott Basham, Manager Development Services, Ms. Tasha Tyler Moore, our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms. Sam Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs. Amanda Morton. And I have no apologies for tonight's meeting. Confirmation of the minutes. Can I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Reet, that the minutes of the open session of the Council meeting number 12, held on the 21st of June 2021, be confirmed as a true record. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion is carried. Workshops held since our last Council meeting. There have been no workshops held since our last Council meeting. We move now to page 2, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest to declare at tonight's meeting? Nope, no declarations of interest. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session? Nope. Questions without notice from the public. Is there anyone in the gallery who would like to ask a question without notice? No? Questions on notice from the public? We have one on Kingston Park from Mr. David Bain and an officer's response from Daniel Smee. Questions without notice from councillors? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much, Acting Mayor. And I'd just like to acknowledge that it is NAIDOC Week and the theme this year is Heal Country. My first question is about smoke pollution. Recently, a constituent raised concerns with me about smoke pollution, whether it's caused by neighbours in suburban areas from faulty chimneys or from hazard reduction burns. My first question is how does Council monitor smoke pollution in the municipality and what responsibilities does Council have to residents to protect them from harmful smoke emissions?
Mr. Basham.
There are MCA smoke regulations which do govern smoke and nuisance in the community. There's also Section 199 of the Local Government Act which regulates nuisance, and our current Environmental Services bylaw has an open air burning provision where certain burning can't happen in certain zones.
Thank you. And so when breaches occur and on-site inspections take place, what measures are taken to check the severity of the breach? For example, do we do particulate testing of the air or do we just do a kind of drive-by inspection?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, apologies. What would generally occur is the officer who would be undertaking the investigation would ultimately determine how it has affected the person who is the complainant. And, you know, if there's serious medical issues or whatever it may be. Our main focus is to obviously cease the nuisance and then provide education.
Thank you. Through you, Acting Mayor, my next question is about roadkill. It's very distressing to see so many of our native creatures hit by cars, many with joeys in the pouch. One such roadkill hotspot is along Leslie Vale Road. Will the council install more road safety signage and slow down for wildlife signs on Leslie Vale Road?
Mr. Reeve.
Through your Acting Mayor, Council does have a set of guidelines for when we may or may not put in such signage. We can assess that location against that set of guidelines there to see whether or not it actually suits to put any in that location.
Thank you. And just further to that point, through your Acting Mayor, can Council invest in acoustic barriers at well-known hotspots?
Acoustic barriers for wildlife?
Yeah, that's right.
Mr. Reeve.
Through your Acting Mayor, certainly that sort of technology is a relatively expensive type technology, and once again it would be based on whether or not the location actually warranted any type of measure through the various different guidelines that we've actually put in place there. So it would need to be a particular area where particular type of animal which may have been endangered or in that type of list there that might actually be at risk there, for us to consider that type of option.
Thank you. And just on that, through your Acting Mayor, can Council start to publish a list of roads where we have plans to install wildlife, slow down for wildlife signs? And that way, the idea is that residents might be able to look and see if their road is on the list to receive a slow down for wildlife sign in the future, and that might prevent some of the back and forth with residents who are asking for those kinds of signs.
Mr. Reeve.
Through your Acting Mayor, there is none that are currently on the list, but if there was any that were to be on the list there, we could certainly publicise that.
Thank you so much. Just a couple more questions through you, Acting Mayor. This one is about the Margate development vacant lot. So the Margate shopping centre vacant lot where the hardware store used to be was in the Mercury newspaper again recently, and Legat CEO is quoted as saying, quote, "There are currently no tools available to councils to compel a developer who has met the legal requirements of substantial commencement," and that can be as simple as pouring a slab, "to progress the project," end quote. My question is, is it possible to please outline the process by which either Council or Legat or the State Government could pursue a use-it-or-lose-it planning scheme amendment, altering the legislation in such a way as to stiffen the criteria for substantial commencement so that a major developer, such as in the case of this Margate vacant lot, would have to use it or lose it?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, a possibility that other states have in place is an expiry date on planning permits, which would then force them to either pull down what they've done, such as a half-built building, or to complete the works. As an example, it might be that you must commence within 2 years and complete within 4 years. That doesn't exist in Tasmanian legislation, so that is something that could be pursued. But the concept of land banking, which was mentioned in the article, I don't think any states have quite grappled how to stop that, because that is just where people have it and choose not to act on a permit.
Thank you. My penultimate question is about smoke-free Kingborough Sports Precinct. My question is, how are we progressing with plans for a smoke-free Kingborough public spaces, such as the sports precinct and areas of the CBD? What are the kind of timeframes that we should expect before being ready to declare the sports precinct smoke-free and implement adequate signage and community awareness for that broad change?
I'll take that one on notice, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. My final question is just about the GM's diary. I'm interested to hear more about stage two of the Kingston Health Centre and the container deposit scheme.
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor, Councillor Cordova, I met with Shane Gregory from the Department of Health following the pre-state election commitment from the Liberal now government for $30 million for stage two. It was a very preliminary discussion. The Department of Health are in the process of scoping the works out, so early days yet. In terms of the container deposit, I attended a webinar. I think my colleague, David Reeve, also attended it, and he's probably best placed to answer that question.
Yes, through you, Acting Mayor. So it was basically just a general information session for elected members, or some elected members were on, who attended that one there, and other parties as well, just on the container deposit scheme there, what it might mean, when it's likely to actually come in then, the process from now to then, and just an opportunity for people to actually ask any questions they might actually have on the particular scheme as well at the same time. So, yes, it didn't involve anything more than that. It was relatively well received by those who actually attended there. There was a number of questions from different people there that was answered by the conveners. And no doubt they'll probably run some additional sessions as they move through some of the aspects of the scheme.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Bastow.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I asked a question in the last meeting in closed session, which was to be answered in this meeting, and there doesn't appear to be an answer within our agenda. So if somebody could check that, please.
We'll follow that up.
Thank you. My next question is, thanks to Council, there's a wonderful new tin roof on the Woodbridge Hall. It's galvanised tin. Will it be painted?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, I will take that on notice, Councillor. Thank you.
Thank you. Right. On Sunday, I was at Kingston Park and the police were again called. There is a baby changing room in the hub, which has a sign on it saying out of order, which I think has been put on by someone here on council, but the door isn't locked. It appears that often young people are going in there and locking the door for considerable amounts of time. Yesterday, when the police were there, it took some time for the people to come out. They left behind their phones and charger, which I gather is part of the reason for going in there. But it was also stated to me by the policeman that these cameras that are at the hub are not all accessed from the same point. Is that true?
Mr.
The security
Basham.
Cameras.
Oh, sorry, Dr. Stevenson.
Can I just clarify, what do you mean viewed by, when you say access from the same point, do you mean people reviewing the footage or?
Sorry?
When you say the cameras are not all accessed from the same point, can you clarify what you mean by
that? Oh, right. Yes, they. A young girl was evidently hit, beaten. And they weren't able to get, the police weren't able to get the records straight away because the, where you review what the security cameras see is not, it's not all under one group.
We're just in the process of, sorry, through you, Deputy Mayor, we're just in the process of working through the security, a new contract with Golden Electronics, so we will have one organisation that can respond, that is able to collect the footage for the police and so forth. So we think it'll be much quicker in future. So that meeting only happened on Friday last week to go through those different measures, but it's all part of the expanded security for the hub in Kingston Park.
Okay. Could we then, as well as that, the PowerPoints that are, the outside PowerPoints at the hub are not locked. They have covers on them, but they're not locked. And there have been large numbers of teenagers going there and plugging in their phones and using the free Wi-Fi after hours, late into the night. I'm wondering if we could have those PowerPoints locked, please.
I'll certainly look into that, Councillor.
Thank you. Through you, Acting Mayor, I'm wondering if Mr. Reeve will be able to put a middle white line on the Woodbridge Hill Road. It's quite difficult, and the road is certainly wider than the Channel Highway through Woodbridge, so it's not a factor that's very narrow. But if we could have something, it's quite difficult coming around the curves without knowing where the middle of the road is.
Mr. Reeve?
Through you, Acting Mayor, we can certainly have a look at that and see whether there is enough room there to actually have a middle white line.
Thank you. And my last question is about the tree on Osborne Avenue, which I think probably myself and many other councillors have had notices about, with citizens wishing to have it cut down. I'm wondering if this tree that they wish to have cut down is the same tree that the council spent the $50,000 on to save it.
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the answer to your question is no, Councillor Astor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. Councillor Grace.
Thank you. Can I just follow up on Councillor Cordova? Obviously, you've been doing a bit of legwork down at Margate area in the last few weeks to come up with the shopping centre. Can I just say, and I know you're going to get offended, but...
Have you got a question, Councillor Grace?
The question is, can I just give you a pre-hemp on what's happening there?
No, not really, I'm sorry.
Okay, all right, I'll follow your line. My question is, there are people interested in going to that spot. There is two developments that have been talked about through this council in the last month or so, and this shopping centre has been 9 years. My question is, does council want development south of Kingston? I don't think it does. That's one of my questions.
From my perspective, the answer to that question is yes.
Well, they're not showing much of an encouragement, but that's my point of view. The general manager's... is there anything wrong with that, Lloyd? From House Street? No? Okay, thank you. My other question is, general manager again, your communication, Metro. Are we ever going to get a report from Metro regarding the bus shelters at Conyngham?
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I haven't received a response. Councillor Grace.
Mr. Mayor, Madam Mayor, it wasn't that long ago. It was Women's Week, and Women's Week got the biggest publicity about women in our world. And yet we can't seem to get an answer about a bus shelter that was painted by the public, by this council sanction, representing breast cancer. I'm absolutely dumbfounded. And I have one other question. I know you won't answer it, but... can we have a report on, please, the Bruny Island Boat Club lease? As I understand that council had a differences of opinion, who actually owns the land? I believe Crown own it. So could we get a report on that lease, please? Or is it going to be confidential? Or?
We'll take that on notice, Councillor Grace.
Thank you.
Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'm just a minor issue on the Kingborough Community Safety Committee minutes. I noticed that the speed trailers had been used by schools, around schools, and that the data from those trailers was provided to committee members. And I'm just wondering if that could also go to councillors.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. A question regarding what Councillor Bastone raised regarding the PowerPoints being accessible in the Kingborough Hub. Would it be true to say that many new public space developments have free Wi-Fi and charging points available 24 hours a day that are accessible across Tasmania and Australia?
Dr. Stevenson?
Certainly free Wi-Fi is generally not shut off at any particular time. I'd have to take on notice the question about PowerPoints, but I do note that we do need the PowerPoints accessible early for when we have functions and events there, so we would just need to think through how we manage the any locking in that situation.
And with the matters of increasing numbers of young people hanging about in the particular public space around the hub, has Council thought about a discussion or a workshop in regards to actually talking to young people about what activities they'd like to see in the future, what are the gaps and what's missing, and I guess what's leading them to spending more time at the Kingborough Hub? It's very well known that during that time of lifespan, young people do like to spend time in public locations, but I'm wondering, with the increasing number of young people that are there and there is an increase in crime and different activities, what are we taking any action about this?
Through you, Acting Mayor. There are certainly preliminary conversations going on through our youth officer, who spends a lot of time down at the hub, and through our holiday program. But in the next few months, we will finish the works to move our community services team down there permanently, and that will better facilitate ongoing engagement with all users of the hub, including our younger cohort.
Thank you very much. A couple more questions. Thank you, David Bain, who asked questions in regards to the Stage 2 for Kingston Park. I have been made aware through KBUC that there could be a potential pump track in that area as part of Stage 2. I'm wondering if these plans will be available to the public or if there's any other further consultation regarding Stage 2.
I think we'll have to take that one on notice.
Thank you. Are Council staff aware if the State Roads Department has a plan or strategy for future growth in Kingborough?
Ms. Tyler Moore?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, as far as I know, there are no plans or strategic planning for growth in our region related to road infrastructure.
Thank you. A question regarding the GM diary, the UTAS Municipal Climate Profiles presentation. I'm wondering if you could hear some more information regarding that, and if it's suitable, could that be shared to councillors, please?
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Thanks, Councillor Midgley. Yes, look, I'll endeavour to get that provided. I don't have it at the moment, but the presentation was quite interesting. It's work that's been undertaken under the auspice of the STCA, and I'll seek a copy and make it available to councillors.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I have had contact from a number of business owners at Kingston Beach, and I understand council staff have as well, in relation to council's food van policy and the areas at Kingston Beach. I understand that council staff are undertaking some work with respect to that policy, and I'm wondering whether I could understand where that is at, and when we can expect it to be back at council for us to review and make a decision on.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yeah, look, we're hoping to bring that one back to council either to the next meeting or to the meeting after. So just as a little bit of a prelude to that, I guess, one of the changes we're looking to make, or the major change we're looking to make to the policy there, is to move away from exclusion zones and moving the emphasis more onto trading locations. So just saying these are the locations we would accept for people to trade in, as compared to saying you can go anywhere except for these areas. So that's what we're actually aiming to do. What would be really good if certainly councillors or anybody else had any sort of viewpoints on that, I'd be quite happy to take that on board there, and we can incorporate that as part of our report back to council as well at the same time there. So please contact me with anything that you may have or concerns you may have.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Grace.
Yeah, I just forgot one. Madam Chair, Silverwood Park. I was there yesterday. Now, I understand we spent some 200,000 there. Or is the work not yet completed because down near the barbecue there was a foot of water ponding in the parking area is atrocious?
No, those works aren't complete yet for Silverwater Park, Councillor Grace.
Can you just wonder when they will be? Is that included in the works?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Those works are still in the design phase at this stage there, so haven't seen any works down there yet. But obviously there's been a fair amount of consultation with the local residents and other people down through there, so the intention is to then move that from a design phase to a construction phase probably sometime in the next couple of months or so.
Councillor Reid.
Thank you. My question is for Mr. Reeve as well. Just in relation to pedestrian crossings at Kingston Beach, this has been raised over quite some time, I believe, by local residents and visitors to the area. And I understand the rationale of not having a crossing, an additional pedestrian crossing at the end of the road closest to the beach so that you've got two around the corner from one another. I understand that could pose some traffic difficulties, but I don't understand why we wouldn't be providing a pedestrian crossing further up on Beach Road around the vicinity of the big car park at the health centre there so people can cross there and there's still a distance. And I'm just wondering if Mr. Reeve can give some feedback on that, because I would have thought we've just now missed an opportunity with the works there of having a curb let down and being able to do some of that as well.
Mr. Reeve.
Through your Acting Mayor, not really. So I guess our intention is for one of the next phases for Kingston Beach is to look at the traffic management all the way through Kingston Beach. So that includes the Osborne Beach Road intersection. So even though we've done works there, it's primarily on the footpath there. This will be about the actual road pavement itself. But it'll also include Beach Road as well. So for those who drive down there on a regular basis, which I'm sure is most people, we have the 40k sign and then it's pretty much gun barrels straight all the way down to the beach there, and that does encourage people to actually go over that speed limit. So we would be looking at trying to actually get some traffic calming in there. In terms of the pedestrian crossings, it all comes down to the width of the road you've got to play with as well at the same time. So if you're looking for a refuge in the middle of the road there, you've got to have enough width in that road to actually allow that to actually put in place there. Certainly the safe crossing of pedestrians throughout that whole precinct is actually going to be an important part of what we'd be putting forward for consideration for council in next financial year in terms of a package of works for that area there. It is a work in progress in terms of that, so we'll be looking at some of the design aspects of it for this year with the viewpoint of putting forward a submission for next year.
Thank you. So there would be no reason, if we just wanted to have a straight-through pedestrian crossing with no refuge in the middle, so basically replicating what is already on Osborne Esplanade but on Beach Road, there's nothing to stop that happening, is there? There's no physical...
Through you, Acting Mayor, I guess the only thing to stop that is more to do with best practice at the moment. So best practice at the moment is not to have the zebra crossings, which is what you're referring to there, I believe. It's certainly something that a lot of organisations have actually moved away from, including State Growth. So they're not really supportive of those types of crossings there. And we've also tried to move away from those particular crossings there. It doesn't preclude them actually going there, but it does. It's not probably the best practice, mainly just due to the fact that they have been shown to actually cause more problems rather than not in terms of the uncertainty between pedestrians and vehicles there and actually in a lot of locations causing more accidents rather than not. So that's been the main driver for people to actually move away from those types of facilities. But it's not an unauthorised type of installation.
So does the council require the permission of State Growth to install a pedestrian crossing?
Through you, Acting Mayor, we don't require the permission of State Growth for a pedestrian crossing there. We would probably might go back to them in terms of advice, particularly in terms of if we were trying to put in something which is a non-supported type of device like that to get their viewpoints back at the same time. But they're not a party there in terms that's required to give us an approval for that type of facility.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear it is possibly then still on the agenda, because it's really difficult, particularly when there's an event on at the Kingston Beach Hall and you've got people coming out of the oval when there's football and cricket and things on. So hopefully it's something we can progress. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. A further question regarding the food truck policy. Can we include a clause regarding the banning or phase out of single-use plastics in this upgraded policy?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. I guess we could. I mean, we certainly have done it for council-supported events or events where council has an interest in. I guess this is slightly different in terms of it being a business. To a degree, so it'd be akin to actually going to your other businesses, your fixed businesses there, and actually saying that we require you to use single-use plastics there, and you really do need probably some sort of head of power for that. We can certainly look at maybe orientating it around trying to encourage or support or whatever it happens to be, that they would actually use those types of things. But without that head of power, it makes it a little bit more difficult, whereas we do have that power under our own policy there for our own events that we actually run ourselves, so we can actually, enforce that a little bit better.
Thank you. Councillor Wath.
Yes, thank you, Acting Mayor. I'd like to ask where Legat is and whether we should following Legat or whether we should be following the Hobart City Council in relation to banning single-use plastics.
We'll have to take that one on notice, Councillor Wath.
Thank you, Acting Mayor, and I'd also like to flag that I'd like a question in closed session, please.
Thank you. We now move.
Ask what the question can. If I take something in closed session, we have to give a detail what it is.
No, Councillor Grace. We'll discuss the question when we get to closed session. We now move to question on notice from councillors. We have a question on page 2 from Councillor Cordova regarding fish farms, with an officer's response on page 3. We have a question from Councillor Bastone on page 3 regarding a change of speed limit in Crescent Drive, with an officer's response on page 3. We have a question from Councillor Reach on works at Beach Road in Kingston, with an officer's response. We have a question from Councillor Reach regarding environmental management and pollution control, smoke regulations, with an officer's response on page 4. And we have another question from Councillor Reach regarding a sewer spill at Browns River on page 4, with an officer's response. With that, our open session now adjourns and our planning authority commences at 6:03 p.m. So we now move to officers' reports to the Planning Authority, DA 2020-676, development application for utilities, roundabout and associated works.
I'll move.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Do I have a seconder? Do we have any councillor to move an amendment or an alternative to the proposal?
I have an alternative if there's no seconder for the original.
So just double check we don't have a seconder for the original. Okay, Councillor Street, would you like to move an alternative?
Acting Mayor, I move the original motion with an amendment to the first condition in the approval, which I understand Ms Morton has.
I'd like to second that. Thank you.
Seconded by Councillor Fox. Thank you. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'm happy to move this motion, I'm very pleased to move this motion, in fact, with the amendment as up on the screen. For those watching at home, the amendment is essentially to the effect that the approval will be conditioned on the inclusion in the final plans of a northbound slip lane which allows traffic from the Channel area to bypass the proposed roundabout rather than having to travel through the roundabout. While the original proposal did fit within the planning scheme, I think it's important to recognise that over the last week we have had a considerable amount of community concern about the original roundabout proposal and the potential for it to slow traffic out of the Channel area, which is an incredibly fast-growing area for the municipality. That was clearly not a desirable outcome, even though that original proposal did fit within the planning scheme. What's important, I think, is that staff and the applicant have been able to work to get an outcome here which sees that northbound lane included, and that's why I'm happy to support the motion with that included as a condition on the approval. I'm now satisfied that it both fits within the planning scheme and also will resolve most of those matters that the community and the Channel particularly have had an issue with, but also allow for better access to Huntingfield too, which is exceptionally important now and going to be even more important going forward as we see further development potentially in that area depending on what is applied for in the future. So I'm happy to support the motion and I commend it to Council.
Can I have a question?
We can move to you next, Councillor Grace, for your contribution or a question.
I have no problem with that. It sounds a pretty good idea, but one wonders how much work goes on behind the scenes that I'm left out of, because this is the first time I've heard of an amendment that was made. Why wasn't it made available to me as a councillor sometime today? I'm very disappointed, Madam Chairman, that I'm absolutely dumbfounded that I'm not getting this information. No, you don't need a
We have a point of order
it's
from
the
Councillor
truth,
Street.
Information.
Point of order, Councillor Street.
Councillor Grace is making a reflection on, I imagine, me as the mover and other councillors in relation to this matter. The reality being that this motion was circulated by email to all councillors this afternoon.
That's correct. The email was circulated at 3:59pm today, Councillor Grace, and you were included in that email.
I'm sorry I'd left before then, because I had prior meetings, as you know.
Councillor Bastow.
Thank you. I just have one question in whether this will make a difference to... on page 33... in one of the issues that was brought up is the active transport considerations, pedestrians and cyclists. And the answer that was given is a pedestrian crossing along the southern leg of the roundabout is proposed to connect the pedestrians and cyclists on either end of the roundabout along the highway. The crossings are designed, etc., etc. Now, I'm just wondering whether this pedestrian crossing would be able to go ahead if we also had a northbound lane, or whether we need to look at having an underpass.
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the suggested bypass lane or additional lane would be on the western side, so the other side of the road to where the pedestrian lane is. As we don't have any preliminary plans or design of how they will achieve it, I can't say for certain, but it would be our expectation, looking at the revised plans, that the pedestrian way and the cycleway remain, but it's on the other side of the road. It is likely that they would need to encroach further into the land on the western side, so on the high side of the road, to add in that slip lane, but still keep the same alignment on the low side of the road.
Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very pleased that this amendment's come to us, but I do want to point out that we are acting as a planning authority, and it's very difficult for councillors to exercise their will in most cases. And I do note that the report had stated that a slip lane was not needed at this point of time, but I think that is probably based on figures of traffic at the moment or when the studies were done fairly recently, and not based on the projection of the amount of traffic that would be coming out of Huntingfield. And I think it's really good that we can be ahead of the game rather than behind the game with infrastructure. And it's particularly good that this is a state government department that's prepared to accommodate the wishes of councillors and also of the community. Because it's often the case that we might want something but the developer doesn't allow us to have it. And I just want to commend all those people who've been involved in coming to this arrangement. And I think it's a very good outcome and a very unusual one for council. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Street and staff, for putting forward the amendment and all the work that's gone on behind doing that. I know, as many of us had people contact us in regards to the slip lane and the discussions and concerns in regards to that, because we are faced with, again, a plan that is in isolation to a much larger and significant development for Kingborough. And as we heard from Ms Tyler Moore earlier regarding a question that I asked, that State Roads does not have a plan or strategy for future growth in Kingborough. I'm fully aware this roundabout is an important part of the Huntingfield estate and is required as another vehicular access point for the area, but it's quite sad that we're creating a development with such a high dependency on cars. The roundabout, as stated in the report, will help to redistribute traffic and ease strain, hopefully, on Algona Road roundabout. And as with that slip lane, again, I think it's important to have that due to that strain on traffic and the redistribution, hopefully not all going to Algona Road. As stated on page 7, the proposed roundabout is to provide primary vehicle access for the proposed Huntingfield estate, which has not yet been approved. Page 15, the design of the roundabout has been made with due regard to the relevant Oz State Government and Council standards in relation to traffic level, safety, vehicle size and frequency. Does it consider the growth of the area in the channel when considering traffic levels? That is a question that I would like to ask.
Ms Tyler Moore.
ED, did Department of Communities ask staff for more information about the future growth and traffic level prediction, say, 50 years from now?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the applicant had a consultant whose responsibility was to look at that and look at certain reports. There was not an active request for information. However, we proactively engaged a separate engineer to do a peer review of the reports that were provided, and our peer review demonstrated what we had concern about before engaging a consultant, that the data was out of date and wasn't complete. We provided our response back to the applicant. They considered that, acknowledged that the reports didn't reflect that well, that they had used it, and they did do some modelling based on that prediction. And the result was that it didn't make a huge leap to say that the design had to change. However, the prediction that it would need upgrading would probably be lessened, so the TIA talks about that the roundabout would probably need to be upgraded in 10 years. And it's just going to accelerate that time, or shorten that time, if you like, that demand would be required sooner than that. It went back to the applicant for response.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So with the amendment and implementation, hopefully, of the slip lane, that will perhaps give some more lifespan to the roundabout in regards to the possible increase of traffic.
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, the applicant will need to look at the redesign and how that's going to occur and how it's going to be achieved. As I mentioned earlier, we haven't had preliminary drawings on that, so it's in theory that it will. We don't have specific modelling for that. My understanding is that the consultant representing the applicant was not asked to do that. They were asked mainly to provide access to the subdivision site. That was their purpose. So they weren't asked to proactively look at a solution for Kingborough traffic problems, and that's how they responded. And the same with our consultant. We didn't ask for an alternative design because that's not our responsibility as the planning authority. We just asked for a peer review. So they also didn't come up with a design, but it was acknowledged that the addition of slip lane would be of assistance.
Thank you. The corridor planning studies reference a lot in this report, and one of the major outcomes from the stakeholder engagement with that planning study, with the corridor study, was regarding the wish for more cycling infrastructure. And in the context of this report, I do not see this highly mentioned in regards to cycling infrastructure. So if there was to be a potential off-road shared path in the future, what impact does the roundabout have on this, and has it been considered?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, the design you'll see on the plans does show a cycle path, which is not dissimilar to the Margate cycle path, where it's off the highway. It's proposing it along its frontage. It doesn't, however, deal with the end of its concrete of the path. We would need to look at how that will be resolved in the future and where the connection point is, and that cycle path is only provided on the low side of the road, which does make some sense because on the high side of the road there's not as much to connect it to. The housing and the school and the industrial estate are on the low side, so it makes sense to put it there. With respect to then connecting it with the other housing estates, Whitewater and Spring Farm, that would need to be considered going forward, and certainly we would hope that that would be considered as part of the government's $60 million upgrade for the intersection, but we've seen no plans, so I've got no detail about it, and it sits as a council matter, not a planning authority matter at this point.
Thank you. Page 29, it mentions safe systems principles. What are the safe system principles that guide design for pedestrian and cycle standards?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, they're written in the Austroad standards, and it talks about various design elements and considerations. I don't know the details myself. I'm not an engineer, and I haven't got the opportunity to look at those details. We can provide them to councillors should they wish to see them to understand that better. But my understanding is the reports and the consultants' reports were that it did comply with those standards.
Thank you very much. And through you, Mayor, Acting Mayor, I did ask staff earlier if perhaps we could have a look at the design of the roundabout on a council screen, and just to be sure that we are, and if it doesn't suit, it doesn't matter, but just to be sure, just to see the potential of the slip lane and just to talk us through the roundabout so we can just agree on that, hopefully pass this one as it is.
Are you able to put that up on the screen, Mrs Morton?
Thank you.
There we go.
So through you, Deputy Mayor, you have a picture in your agenda in the attachments as well, the roundabout. It didn't give you the overall context of the area, so we've put it into this one. So this is obviously down towards Kettering Snug. The top of the page is towards Hobart. The leg that comes out that way is the entrance to the new housing estate, the Huntingfield housing estate, and the condition has been written that the bypass lane or slip lane or whatever design they come up with would occur on the high side, so on this side of the roundabout, and the reason for that, as opposed to any other point, is the concern is that the traffic coming out of the new housing estate gets preference in that roundabout because, as we know, you give way to your right. And so you would have to continually wait for them as they go around, because there's obviously a significant number of lots in that area, particularly around peak hour. It may not be such a bad problem outside of peak hour. And by doing that, it means you just get to go past and continue through. Very similar to the Algona Road roundabout set up now, where you don't have to enter or give way to traffic. You can just continue on your way. Obviously, it will need to, if they don't duplicate the highway, they will still need to deal with merging into a single lane.
Thank you. Councillor Grace.
Just a question. As this is just a development application, these are only preliminary drawings. They're not construction drawings. So therefore, will they need a building application? And when the as constructed plans are drawn up, surely then our engineers department, council and planning, would we not have further say in this? I mean, we're only looking at a small detail drawing, but the question is, will they require, once the as constructed drawings are blown up, will they need a building development application?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, no, a building permit is not required for the construction of a road or roundabout. There's no structures or buildings, so it doesn't trigger that need. We do have detailed designs. We've only used some plans for the purpose of the report. Otherwise, I think there's 111 sheets, I think. So we do have detailed design. They'll need to do further detailed design. If the decision is made tonight to include the new condition one, they'll need to resubmit plans, which we'll consider. As constructed drawings only occur after it is constructed, as the name suggests, as constructed drawings, and we use that to keep the data in our GIS system and asset management.
Thank you. So basically what you're telling me, Ms. Taylor, more through you, Acting Mayor, is that this, what we've got in front of us, is virtually what went out to the public for consultation when the government did the consultation on this works.
Ms. Tyler Moore?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, the government didn't do any consultation for the roundabout. They did consultation on the subdivision. This only came through as a planning permit condition for the roundabout, and yes, these are the plans that we as council used for public advertising. So these are the plans that the public saw, and there were further reports and plans that we had listed that members of the public could seek to view, and some members of the public did do that.
Councillor Bastane.
Sorry, I have a question through you to Mrs. Tyler Moore. Is there not some concern that the traffic coming out of Huntingfield will be doing 50 k's an hour and the highway at the moment is 90 and will be, I believe, 80 k's an hour when the roundabout's in? Is this not a difficult situation?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. Acknowledging I'm not an engineer, but I have sought advice. It's not a concern. It's most roundabouts have a situation where there's a lower speed limit that enters into a roundabout. The benefit of a roundabout is that you essentially stop. So everyone's come to a stop because you can't just travel through unless there's a bypass lane, which you're not entering the roundabout. So no, it's not a concern because all must stop and all must adhere to the road rules of entering a roundabout. So the speed limit, it shouldn't be an issue.
Councillor Watts.
Yes, thank you, Acting Mayor. For over 20 years, we've been waiting for another road or access point in and out of Huntingfield. We've been promised it for a long time, and now it looks like it was coming, and certainly with the amended condition number one, I'm happy to support it. Previously, I would not have supported for obvious reasons. I'd like to just cover a few items in the report. And it does say that the proposal is for modification of the Channel Highway to construct roundabout to facilitate access to and from the proposed Huntingfield Housing Development Stage 1. And my response to that is that there is no reference to existing traffic, daily issues faced, or the substantial existing roadway, or the future housing stages. So I think this condition allays those fears. The proposed roundabout design has been selected based on considerations of safety, performance and alignment within the existing Channel Highway corridor. And the answer to that from the community is that it has not considered the substandard highway. And we know it's substandard, and we're sure that DSG know it's substandard, but yet nothing is being done. In the future, beyond the 10-year time frame, or if significant development occurs in other areas not currently known or approved, then additional lanes may be warranted. So quite clearly, no strategic planning is evident. It reminds us of the initial southern outlet and the Kingston Bypass roadways, where no future planning was undertaken with both roadways. Both roadways were proving inadequate, and with millions of dollars required to revisit and upgrade both roads. Housing in Snug and Margate is waiting in the wings and will happen in less than 10 years. A grade separated interchange for Huntingfield would likely increase strain on Algona Road roundabout and the southern outlet, the report goes on to say. And I think what the community's saying here is, does that really matter? Both are gridlocked to peak hour traffic and have been so for many years. So the question should be, why hasn't it been rectified? The report also says that the roundabout itself does not generate traffic. I think we all agree to that, but it does produce rat runs that further exacerbate traffic issues, congestion and gridlocking. And again, this condition one will overcome most of that. In relation to speed and traffic flow on the road, there has been a reduction in speed. This represents a high priority opportunity for the safety of the Channel Highway Corridor study. And perhaps we could say that the design of the roundabout is flawed from the start as it was presented to us, and accident statistics would in fact confirm that. The new access provides residents with an alternate access in emergency events, which is considered beneficial. The existing Honeyfield access is subject to queuing and delays. Provision of an alternate access can remove moments from Algona Road roundabout, which has significant network benefits. And perhaps the community would say there that there's not much use in an emergency when vehicles are gridlocked and vehicles are not going to go anywhere because traffic is at a standstill. No mention of motorists, particularly those from the south. And not much help if you're from Huntingfield and wish to go into the Kingston CBD or Blackmans Bay, because the Algona roundabout will suddenly not become free. And perhaps we should say that it's not the community's fault that this greatly designed Algona Road roundabout is not working. It's gridlocked morning and afternoon and has been for many years. And again, we're still waiting on it. Note is made that the TIA indicates that the roundabout will result in some delays for existing through moments, but that these were not considered unreasonable given the circumstances of the site and area. Perhaps in response to that, is now is the time to make the site area safe and up to date to meet future demands. We shouldn't need to revisit this site and waste millions of dollars in, say, 5 years, and I think this amended and added condition will go some way to achieve that. The applicant has responded and advised that the speed reduction associated with implementing a roundabout at this location is consistent with changes proposed in the Channel Highway Corridor study report, and as such may occur irrespective of the Huntingfield development or the proposed new roundabout. And the community here would say that this confirms what we already know, that the Channel Highway is presently substandard. The current and future performance and capacity constraints of the Algona roundabout were known and taken into consideration in respect to the Huntingfield roundabout, and I'll finish on the response here and I'll leave it open for you. This has been known by local motorists for a long, long time. The real question should be, why hasn't DSG fixed the Algona roundabout issue?
Thank you, Councillor Wass. Councillor Midgley, do you have a question?
I have a further question. In regards to the slipped lane, which hopefully happens, will that have an impact at all, would we think, in regards to the Maddox Road intersection?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, We don't know the outcome of the impact on the design of Maddox Road upgrade intersection upgrade.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. A question about, with this new amendment, does that mean the proponent will need to do a new traffic impact assessment?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, we would need to consider the design that they come up with and consider whether there is need to provide supporting engineering reports to go with that. This is a slightly unusual approach to ask for it at this stage, but of course we need to make sure it's compliant, so we would ask for that as evidence that it is does comply with all those elements that are listed there, AusTrails and the Australian standards, as well as the planning scheme.
Thank you. Through you, Acting Mayor, I note that it says in the report that the acoustics, it'll be less noisy, but obviously if it starts out very noisy, then less noisy could still be too noisy. My question is, what elements are proposed to attenuate traffic noise or other detrimental impacts associated with the proximity to the road as per 10.4.2 Performance Criteria 1B?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, the... For the new estate, they would need to consider the impact on from the road, and I don't recall off the top of my head if we've already asked the question. I suspect we have because of the proximity of those new lots to the highway. So they would put up acoustic walls similar to Spring Farm and the like.
That makes sense. Thanks very much. And then on page 20, at the bottom of the page, it's talking about how it's not complying with A1 and A2. Quote, landscaping is not provided along the entire frontage. My question is just, could you please run us through the landscaping? Why isn't it along the whole way?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. The application's a bit unusual in that it actually touches a whole lot of zones, which, as you will read in the report and as the office has stated, aren't really relevant because it's talking about a highway, but the planning scheme doesn't depart from it, so it's a bit unusual. So that landscaping really is to do with a different type of development. But in saying that, a landscape concept plan was provided to us, and I believe either condition 2 or 3 does ask for an amended landscape plan that will provide that detail suitable for the highway. And obviously there's some overall provisions about appropriate landscaping to highways, and the subject site, the subdivision site, would also require some element of landscaping, so they have the sort of their buffer and then the buffer of the highway as well, which will need to consider the appropriateness and type of landscaping to occur.
Thank you. Through your Acting Mayor, this question is now about, we've heard a bit about the active transport. It says in it's page 20 that the footpaths will encourage public access, and my question is kind of like, encourage public access from where to where, because on page 32, down the bottom of the page, it explicitly says, and I quote, there is no connected system to other paths and council is actively working on this issue as opportunities arise, end quote. So my question is, why would the public be encouraged to access these footpaths if they don't lead anywhere beyond the subdivision? For example, can one walk or cycle safely to Kingston Town Shopping Centre under the design?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, no, it doesn't, and it's a bit of an ask for a roundabout. So it's providing along the frontage, and hopefully council will need to think about how they're going to do that, or state growth, it is a state growth road, and look at the future planning and budgets associated with that.
Thank you. I wanted it to be a magic roundabout. On page 25, the final dot point talks about the corridor study, and it says the traffic impact assessment demonstrates that the roundabout is likely to reduce gap acceptance for turning vehicles. Could you please explain the concept of gap acceptance?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Reducing gap acceptance for turning vehicles.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. As I've stated a couple of times, I'm not an engineer.
That's okay.
I don't know whether you've got any assistance on that, because I would actually just be having a guess at what it means.
I had a guess. Yeah.
Three-year acting mayor, yeah. So basically what it's about is you've got all your cars that are queued up on either side type of thing, and it's the ease of getting onto the roundabout and getting off the roundabout. So they call that, the gap acceptance there. So they have some figures for that, which would say that's how this would actually operate reasonably well. If it was below that figure, it probably wouldn't operate as well type of thing. So that's effectively what it is in layman's terms.
Thank you, that makes sense. My final question before I move on to substantive is on page 27 when it talks about the scenic landscape codes. I found this quite interesting. It says, quote, "The Channel Highway is a significant existing element in the scenic landscape of the area," end quote. I agree with that. And then at the bottom of that paragraph it says, quote, "This major infrastructure is contributing to the landscape values of the area," end quote. Could you please explain how it's contributing to landscape values?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. The landscape value may be to Summer Highway, but I believe that it's actually referring to the fact that they will be doing landscaping in that around that area, which is a better outcome than we have in other areas and some of their recent intersections which need to be addressed.
Condition 2 outlines landscaping.
Thanks very much. So I'm going to race through my thoughts on this proposal. It's received a significant amount of community interest. It's backed by a comprehensive report, and I thank everyone involved in that. I also thank Councillor Street and the changes that have been made with that amendment with the northbound traffic. It's a big improvement. Is it a panacea? Remains to be seen. There are elements of this DA that are consistent with the planning scheme, and we've heard about many of those. There are elements which do not comply with the planning scheme. For example, on 19.4.3, landscaping A1 and A2, the proposal fails to comply because landscaping isn't provided, and we've heard a bit about that. Similarly, the proposal fails to comply because of its need to destroy 7 high conservation value trees. Now, when it comes to those trees, of course, we know that there was no possible alternative, and so a discretion is applied and an offset condition put in the recommendation. That makes sense. With the landscaping plan, however, alternatives do exist, and it is my feeling that the proponent has chosen not to avail themselves of the opportunity to rectify that non-compliance. Some areas of community concern that we've seen in the representations fall outside of the planning scheme and therefore cannot be assessed against this application. For example, concerns raised by community members about the Algona Fork in the Road roundabout, while interesting and salient for a discussion about Greater Hobart's traffic woes and overall municipal connectivity, it falls outside the scope of this DA and therefore it can't be used as a reason to vote against this application. Similarly, some of the commentary in the report itself, whilst alarming, is not sufficient reason to disapprove of the officer's recommendation. So one notable example is on page 24. Quote, "In the future, beyond a 10-year time frame, additional lanes may be warranted," end quote. So in other words, just like the Algona roundabout, which my colleague Councillor Wass, excuse me, talked about, there's an acknowledgement that this proposal may not stand the test of time. And we all know that it took about 5 years for the Algona roundabout to require a $60 million upgrade. Despite the fact that we know that free public transport statewide, more frequent, reliable public transport networks would cost $33 million a year, much cheaper, much better for the environment. Another alarming part of this proposal, at the top of page 26, where it says, quote, "The delay impact is expected to be minimal due to the current delays already occurring, and largely due to the Algona Road roundabout queues and slower drivers, e.g. tourists travelling along the route." In other words, this section of the highway is already well known to be so cooked, so marred by delays, inconveniences and tricky to navigate roundabouts that you'll hardly notice another one with its additional problem impacts. Still, again, that's not reason enough to vote. That's not reason enough for the planning scheme to consider it an inappropriate development. Like Councillor Wass, I agree with the sentiments expressed on page 25 about emergency vehicle access. Having extra egress in the case of wildfire in the Peter Reserve, that is a point well taken. That's a good idea. The question really is about the design of the roundabout and if it's fit for purpose. I think everyone agrees that having extra entrances and exits to Huntingfield is a great idea. When safety issues were raised by community members, the report on page 29 says, quote, "It's issue 4, safety issue with the roundabout. There are concerns with the overall safety of the roundabout and the Channel Highway generally, including pedestrians and bicycles," end quote. And the response there is, quote, "Safety is a guiding principle of road design, and in line with this, safety at the intersection was considered with high importance in line with industry standards," end quote. So basically when the community says, "We're worried that this isn't safe," the response is, "Your safety is important to us." please hold the line. Basically, the answer isn't really an answer in that report. But again, this isn't on its own enough to for the planning scheme to say that the proposal isn't fit for purpose. But where it falls down, where it does not, in my opinion, meet the planning scheme, and where I respectfully disagree with the officer's recommendation on this occasion, even with the amendment, which I think is an improvement, that has been made by Councillor Street from the floor, where this proposal falls down and doesn't meet the planning scheme is at 10.3.1, 13.3.1 and E5.6.2. The report states that on these points, the proposal, whilst non-compliant with the acceptable solution, can be assessed as being compliant under the performance criteria because, and I quote, the use of the Channel Highway and roundabout in light of their transport function does not have an unreasonable impact on residential amenity. End quote. Well, even with the amendment from the floor, I'm not convinced. On this occasion, I take exception to that assessment. I think that this statement would be true if the proposed roundabout design were of adequate designed to be fit for purpose and compliant with the performance criteria to ensure that traffic will flow smoothly, not just for 6 months or 3 years or 5 years. And I note at this juncture the discussion on page 24 about how the idea of an above-grade intersection was dismissed out of hand because apparently, quote, it is not warranted by the development volumes, end quote. The fact is, if what happens to this roundabout is the same as what happened to Algona Road roundabout, which seems very likely given the high levels of population growth we're experiencing, then this proposal will definitely have an unreasonable impact. Can I ask for just 30 more seconds? 1 minute, maybe.
1 minute. Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Fox. All in favour, please say aye. Those against? We have a division. Those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillors Street, Reet, Fox, Cordova and Midgley, those against? Councillors Bastone, Woss, Westwood and Councillor Grace, are you...
What am I doing?
Would you like Councillor Cordova to have an extra minute?
Oh, I'm sorry, Thank you.
Councillor Cordova, you have your extra minute.
Thank you. This proposal, if it turns into another Algona Road roundabout, will definitely have an unreasonable impact upon residential amenity. Merging vehicles, slow-moving vehicles, cars caught behind trucks trying to accelerate through the roundabout, all of this will have an unreasonable impact on residential amenity. It will have an unreasonable impact on nearby residents and commuters alike. On this occasion, I agree with representors about non-compliance with 5.6.2 of the Road and Railway Asset Code, and I respectfully disagree with the assessment that the proposal is considered to comply with the performance criteria. It is for the non-compliance with the performance criteria at 10.3.1, 13.3.1 and E5.6.2 that I will be voting against this proposal on this occasion, despite the very welcome amendment made by Councillor Street. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Grace?
Well, I thought we're debating just the DA for a roundabout, but it seems we're debating all sorts of things. I mean, we're not the main roads.
Do you have a question?
My question is, with the extra condition one, this application is the same as any application, I understand, can go to the tribunal, planning tribunal?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Councillor Reid.
Thank you, and I thank Councillor Street for bringing the amendment here because I think that has resolved, or hopefully will resolve, some of the concerns that residents who live south of this intersection will have. I just wanted to ask a question in relation to the diagram on, and I've just flicked past it, page, it's the one that shows the land acquisition. Sorry, I had it and then I flicked away. Page, it's got the blue on it. Diagram, yeah, what page? Page 74, thank you. With the addition of the slip lane that we've just put in the amendment, is there sufficient land to accommodate that without acquiring further land?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, no, there's not sufficient land. They would need to extend the public acquisition. Council's not doing that public acquisition. It's part of the applicant, which is the Department of Communities. to do that, unless, of course, there was any other involvement from state agencies with respect to the upgrade of the highway. But that's up to them to work that out.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I just wasn't sure. It didn't seem to be a very large area from what we've got there, so we'll leave them to sort that out. But look, I know this isn't going to solve everything, but it is very important that we do have an extra exit from Huntingfield in particular, as the report notes, in the event of an emergency such as a fire in the Peter Murrell Reserve or within Huntingfield, it is important that residents have another way of getting out of the area rather than the one entrance and exit that they currently have. So I am pleased to see this going ahead. I guess I'm disappointed that the $60 million upgrade of Algona Road existing roundabout is going to be some years away, and so we need to make do for this for the moment, but I'm happy to support this with the amendment.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillor Street, would you like to sum up?
Only to thank my colleagues for their contributions, and also again thank the community for their response and feedback in relation to this development application.
Thank you. Just to recap, we have before us a development application 2020-676, development application for utilities, roundabout and associated works before us as printed on the screen and in our agenda papers. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
No.
We have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillors Grace, Street, Bastone, Reet, Fox, Midgley, Wass and Westwood, and those against, Councillor Cordova. The motion is carried. We now move to page 91, development application for 13 multiple dwellings, which is stage 2 of the King's Quarter at 7 Goshawk Way, Kingston. Do I have a mover and a seconder for this? Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Street. Thank you, Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought everyone would be leaping to move this motion, which is an application for 13 multiple dwellings within the Kingston Park development, and they comply with all applicable standards of the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015, and the motion is recommended for approval by staff. This is the first development within the Kingston Park area that is coming before council in terms of private development, and the quality and the standard of the buildings it looks very attractive. The heights are all within reason, the setbacks are all within reason, and comply with the planning scheme as the document states, and I wish Traders in Purple well with this development. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Reid.
Thank you. Look, I support this. I did just want to make a comment, and that is one that I've made about the development at Kingston Park before, and that is that given the location of these units to the centre of Kingston CBD, it is really disappointing that the developers have not chosen to make any of them single-storey dwellings, so that people who are looking to downsize, who might be elderly and have mobility issues and who cannot navigate stairs, could have the opportunity to purchase them. So I think that's really poor planning. It's disappointing. I would have also liked to see them do something like fit them out with fittings like handrails and that sort of thing, because it's cheaper to do it when they're developed rather than retrofit later. I think there's a missed opportunity. I know I'm kind of veering off the intent of the planning thing here, but I just want to express that disappointment because it does mean there's a lot of people, once this has passed, who won't be in a position to take advantage of what is a very ideal location, particularly if you no longer drive. So I couldn't let that go unsaid, and you've been very tolerant. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I also have a comment to that, and it's on page 96 in the desired future character statements. Promote development that supports a range of housing types. And in regards to what Councillor Reid has said to the developers, I'm very excited that you're here and that you are building, and it's really fantastic that we're going to have this amazing activated close proximity to the CBD housing space. But in regards to the lines around the desired future character statements, I haven't seen diversity in the housing type that's come before us. When are we going to see diversity in the housing type, which I guess will then be applicable to people with mobility issues that have requirement for single storey? That's what I thought the character statement, I guess, adhered to, that, so that we could provide diversity of housing.
Ms Tyler Wong.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. So this subject, this application is within the Kingston Park SAP, which does include provisions about housing types in there. So there's part of the broader project, the proposal will include apartment buildings, and those apartment buildings will have the opportunity to provide accessible living. Granted, it's not the same as a freestanding house with a garden, but that may very well suit the needs. So there'll be a diversity in that there's ordinary housing stock, attached and detached, and in the future they're proposing to do apartment buildings, which will diversify the type of housing that we have in the area.
Thank you very much. Can you explain how this development meets, as stated on page 95, a compact and visually interesting streetscape with an articulation incorporated into front elevations and constant frontage setbacks, defying a strong building line along the front road that provides ample room for large canopy trees? So can we be reassured that there is ample room for large canopy trees?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, the articulation of the buildings includes obviously the shape of the building, the variation in roof types that they have, and the application of various materials to give that element of articulation. With respect to the setbacks are set under the zoning. This is in a residential zone, and the larger canopy street trees, as the name suggests, relates to the street trees. So this proposal is just within the boundary of its site and doesn't incorporate those street trees to Goss Hall Quay, Pardalote Parade, the intersection of Goss Hall Quay and Pardalote Parade. And there are design elements around street trees within the road design because we consider it as part of the assets. This particular estate, if you like, the roads won't be transferred to council, they'll all be kept as body corporate, so the street landscaping will also be kept as body corporate, not maintained or governed by council. But they'll need to comply with any endorsed plans.
Thank you. I hope it's okay to mention this one, Acting Mayor, but on page 129, we have a look at the images in regards to, I know it's only a view and a speculation of what it would look like, but I look at that and I get actually quite concerned. There's no separated cycle lanes, and it looks like just a car kind of proposed development. So I just wanted to make that statement. I know it's only an image, but it's not the image that I would like to see. In regards, it says 8 visitor car parks for 13 dwellings. Is there a provision at all in the planning scheme required for bike parking?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. The question was bike parking?
Yes.
Yes, there are provisions for push bikes. There are provisions within the planning scheme for certain uses for bicycle parking, but I would need to just double check, but I don't believe it applies to this application.
So Sorry, I thought the answer would be no, so I should have prompted that prior.
I think it might be, but I don't want to be caught out.
Okay, thank you. I would like it to be.
Should we just give you a couple of minutes?
Yes. Just uploading. I could tell you the relevant clause is under the Access and Parking Code, which is Clause 5 for the planning scheme, which applies to all interim planning schemes.
I won't ask you to continue with your questioning because you'll probably have another one for Ms. Tolemore.
Just two more in regards to, can water tanks or solar panels be made a requirement?
We'll answer this one first.
Just while I'm waiting for the state government website to upload, the answer to the water tanks and solar panels is no. That's dealt with under the building regulations with respect to the star ratings that are required for new builds, so it's not dealt with under the planning provisions. So under Clause 6 of the planning scheme, which is the Parking and Access Code, it outlines the different land uses, so it has obviously a lot of commercial uses, shops, hotel industry, residential aged care, and then nothing for residential. So there's no requirement for them to provide bicycle parking for those dwellings.
Councillor Grace?
I don't support it. I won't outline all my reasons for it, but I will just let you know, Acting Mayor, I can't support this.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Fox, would you like to sum up?
Yes, I think it's been interesting hearing the answers to the questions, and particularly the requirement for people with disabilities to be able to move into these areas. But I did overhear a conversation with the developers that there were options for lifts in some of their buildings, so they could be retrofitted, or if people chose a certain design, that those designs could accommodate lifts, but I think it might be at the expense of the new owner. And they're very expensive in most cases. But it's not ruling it out completely, and I think it is important to recognise that we're an ageing community and that there are many people who might be frail at some time in their lives. It's not just about people in wheelchairs. But I do recommend the motion, and I think it's a beginning of a very interesting project. Thank you.
Thank you. We have before us on page 91 a development application for 13 multiple dwellings, stage 2 of King's Quarter at 7 Goshawk Way, Kingston. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? We have a division. Those in favour, please raise your hands. Councillors Street, Bastone, Reet, Fox, Cordova, Midgley, Wass and Westwood, and those against, Councillor Grace. Motion is carried. The Planning Authority now adjourns and the open session resumes at 6:56 p.m. Councillor Grace, good night. We move to page 132. Notices of motion. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no notices of motion received. There were no petitions still being actioned, and at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. So we move to officers' reports to council, page 133, delegated authority policies, with a recommendation on page 10. That the Council rescind policies 1.1 delegated authority and 1.1A planning authority delegations policy, and B, a further report be provided to Council containing details of delegations of approval to staff based on the register compiled by the Local Government Association of Tasmania. Do we have someone to move this and second, please? Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
This is a very interesting situation that we're in, and it's I'll read the conclusion. A review of Council's policies 1.1 and 1.1a has been undertaken, and it's considered that there are in effect nothing more than procedures. Accordingly, it's recommended that they be rescinded and Council make use of the work undertaken by Legat to approve delegations within a contemporary framework that ensures the currency of legislation. We have Mr. Basham here with us, and I'm just wondering whether he would, if through you, Madam Chair, if he could expand on this concept, which is quite new to me.
Dr. Stevenson.
Dr. Stevenson. Yes, thank you.
In the absence of Mr. Smee, we did discuss this. Might surprise councillors perhaps that when I started at council, I brought to the attention of our management team the delegations instruments that Legat produces and updates in partnership with a legal firm for the benefit of all councils. And in discussing those and looking at our policies, it was clear that our policies were really not policies. They were a combination of procedures and the delegation lists. And this is why we have a schedule to review our policies. Time moves on, the legislation changes, and these are clearly legislated requirements that are specified in some detail, so they don't need to be replicated in a policy. What does need to come to council is any amendments to the delegations, and by using the register that Legat produces, it will be much easier to update when there's legislative changes because we'll be notified, and also if there's personnel changes for any reason.
Does this mean that we'll be saving a lot of legal fees, saving money in legal costs?
Dr. Stevenson?
I might need to look to the General Manager. I'm not sure what legal audits might have been undertaken in the past, but certainly in terms of providing information around new delegations, new delegated requirements or new legislative requirements around delegations, that will be picked up through our subscription to the Local Government Association.
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Councillor Fox, I'd just add to that by saying that there will certainly be, if Council adopts this recommendation, savings in terms of administrative costs that we would have otherwise instituted.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Fully accept the tenor of the recommendation. My only concern, and I'm sorry, it's only just something that I've thought about now, surely there are things within these policies or delegations within these policies that do exist that we've made, regardless of the fact that we're taking the view that they could be in a different form than they are currently. I'm just a bit concerned that in rescinding those policies, Council's effectively taking a position that then removes those delegations, and we don't have anything to replace them in the interim until such time as the further report comes, unless I am wrong, Dr. Stevenson.
I believe that they are contained within the instrument of delegation, not within the policy. So the policy outlines who things can be delegated to, but the instrument of delegation is the formal instrument for capturing and approving the delegation. So that's a separate document to the policy.
Okay, I accept that. But the delegations are created... are the delegations created by Council accepting the policy?
No, the delegations are created through the legislative instruments, such as LUPA, such as the Local Government Act.
Sorry, I need to rephrase my question.
Yep.
The particular delegations that Council have made to Council staff and officers, are they created by the Council endorsing the policies? So Council saying the General Manager has Council's authority to do X, that particular delegation, is that created by us endorsing the policy?
No, the policy as it stands, sorry, through you, Acting Mayor, the policy as it stands just says these are the things that may be delegated. It doesn't say who they're delegated to. That's the instrument of delegation. I'm just looking to the General Manager to check I'm correct in this regard, but...
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I've just been trying to check... while that conversation's been happening, to see if I can answer it definitively, and I can't at the moment.
So, I mean, I'm really sorry that I've only just thought about this now. My concern is that what comes before council for us to create these delegations is the policy, not the instrument of delegation or the register. And so in rescinding the policy, my concern is that we will wipe the slate clean with nothing to replace it.
I'm not convinced of that because the policy does not specify any particular delegations. It just lists what can be delegated. So it's, for example, it doesn't go into the level of detail what my delegations are or so forth. So I don't believe
I say what you're saying. That comes to us separately.
That's in the instrument of delegation, so that comes forward separately.
No.
Does that...
No. I'm there now. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, no. I'm there. There is no issue.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'm still not there. So it says at 5.1... Council delegates the following powers and functions to the General Manager or any officer acting in that capacity, unless otherwise prohibited by the Local Government Act. So can you please explain to me again why we didn't... Why is this before us now rather than waiting until the Legat register is provided to councillors? Like, I'm still not getting it.
Dr. Stevenson.
I'll try it. So the Legat register is not a policy. All of the... things that you can delegate are determined by legislation, and the register is effectively mirroring the instrument of delegation. So it's basically the list of who has what delegations, and that's the General Manager can delegate to officers, you delegate to the General Manager. I can see now actually where the question's coming from. So
yeah.
It may be, we may be back to Councillor Street's original...
We are,
yes.
Thank you very much.
To delegate to the General Manager,
I've just got the cat there. Yeah, 5.1 is the bell on the cat. Council delegates to the General Manager the following powers and functions. And I think if we get rid of these policies without having a decision, then we're going to wipe the slate clean regardless of what the register says.
I think the General Manager might have a suggestion.
Yeah.
If I could, through you, Acting Mayor, Councillor Street, can I suggest that we defer this item? There is no imperative for it to be determined tonight, and the issues raised need clarity.
I move that Council defer.
Second by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour that we defer this item, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? The motion is deferred.
And Mr. Smee won't be allowed to go on holidays again.
Thank you for that pick-up, Councillor Street. We now move to page 152. We are almost at the end of our meeting. Should I check, does anyone want a 5-minute break? No? Okay, we'll keep going. So page 152, leasing and licensing policy. We have before us a report from staff with a recommendation that Council's leasing and licensing policy 3.21, as attached to the report, be adopted for a further 5 years. Do I have someone to move that, please? Councillor Street, thank you. Seconded by Councillor Reid. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Staff have reviewed the policy and identified that there are no required changes. The policy has been in place since 2018. which was its inception, and it served its purpose well. It exists alongside the provisions of the Local Government Act in relation to councils leasing and licensing of facilities and property. And on the basis that it's served us well for the last 4 years and the council haven't identified any further changes, I commend the motion.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I have a few questions. The first one relates to thoughts around an agreement renewal process. Can you please point out in the policy, can staff please point out in the policy the process for this? Do we undertake a public process to help identify the current lessee is the most suited?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. The policy itself and the Local Government Act allows for the advertising of a lease before it occurs, and there's also provisions for a rental review within inside the policy itself, and all leases come to council. But in order to give you, I guess, a thorough answer, I'll have to take it on notice and go to our property officer.
Thank you. So it's, I can't see that in the current policy where that is, or is there anything that relates to that question?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. It's approximately section 177 off the top of my head in relation to the Local Government Act, which talks about the advertising. And concerning the review of the rental, it is in the policy. I just don't have it right here and now. But as I said, we'll take it on notice and I'll provide it to you in detail.
Thank you. And some of these questions relate to a little bit of research I did around other councils' policies. So that's where some of the questions have triggered, where I haven't, where I found a few gaps in ours. Where in the policy do we cover, say, peppercorn rental? So I don't really get that it's clear in the not-for-profit area. So I understand we do provide peppercorn rent for different facilities that we own, but I can't grasp where I actually see that in this policy.
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. The clause 6.3, I guess the actual term peppercorn rental is not used in that clause itself, and the intent of that is to provide some level of flexibility concerning non-for-profits or even sporting groups who may be leasing land or et cetera. It does say in there at 6.3, sub-clause B, whilst the market valuation is in most cases won't be applied to non-profit organisations. And I guess that's an a way in saying that as per you've brought forward that peppercorn rental is normally used in that manner.
Thank General you. Manager, would you like to add to that answer?
Through you, Acting Mayor. Councillor Midgley, I'd also draw Council's attention to 6.4 on the policy, which requires a report to council for a council decision for a lease or licence.
Thank you. How are subsidised rents calculated?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. 6.3 subclause D of the policy itself sets out some considerations in relation to the setting of rental of non-commercial leases and licences.
Thank you. Read the matter where it says that it addresses community needs, so not-for-profit organisations in a manner that addresses community needs. Do we have this written down in regards to, like, for transparency and things, what actually are the community needs in making that decision?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. I'm not aware if they're actually written down, but I know that the officers are involved to assess those matters, and as the General Manager said in 6.4, it's brought before Council before it's endorsed.
Thank you. Have we ever considered for transparency reason to actually identify what the community needs are so that an assessment panel can have that written down as a selection criteria or even council to actually address, I guess, and scrutinise if they address community needs, because it's quite a broad definition, and just noting from other council policies, they do actually note what community needs are. Yeah. Anyway,
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. I had a conversation with Mr. Schmee before his absence, and he advised that there has been a number of conversations over the years concerning this and a number of other assessment tools in relation concerning leases and licensing, and it was his opinion that it's just not required at this point in time, but that will be something that could be brought forward.
Thank you. If a lessee rents a property to other, say if they're paying peppercorn rent and they might rent it out for other groups and community groups to use, is there any scrutiny in regards to looking at their books or what they might be, you know, what their financials might be in regards to that? I just know that there are some places that do pay peppercorn rent, but they do then rent it out to other services throughout the week.
Mr. Basham?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, I'm not aware of any, as you said that you are, excluding our hall management committees that rent out sites. My initial thoughts were that there would be conditions on the leases or the licence in relation to, unlike benefiting from a peppercorn-style rent, but I'll have to take the question on notice and run it through our property officer.
Thank you. In regards to the point about other considerations, will we be providing FOGO bins to any of our properties?
Mr. Reeve.
Through your acting mayor, I guess if the properties are actually on the service, they can certainly apply for a FOGO bin if they wish, as could any other resident. So it would depend, I guess, on whether or not that particular facility and what they were using it for was going to need a FOGO bin, I guess, but certainly the opportunity would be there for them to do it if they're within the service area.
Great, thank you. And have we got a plan or policy that looks at a plan for increasing energy efficiency for council buildings? I note I'm asking that question because there is in all new leases to encourage best practice in terms of energy usage.
Mr. Reeve.
Through your acting mayor, we've certainly done that with some of our major buildings there, not with all of our buildings, but it certainly would be something that would be worthwhile looking at in the future there, bearing in mind there's different usage for different buildings there, so things such as solar panels might not always suit some buildings, but they might suit other buildings there. But things like double glazing and some of the other things you can have for energy efficiency may well be applicable for various different buildings there, and I guess they will be looked at on a case-by-case basis.
Thank you. So we don't really have an overall plan, it's just a case-by-case basis. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. I've got a question. Well, firstly, to just say that I really support the principles outlined here of procedural fairness, transparency and public interest. My question is about that transparency element. And is there a point within the policy where it talks about the idea of letting the community know who's getting what and for how much to make sure that it's all fair? Is there such a register of lessees that's available to the public upon request, for example?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. There definitely is a register. I have a copy of it here in front of me tonight. I don't believe that it's accessible to the public as a direct document, but whether that would be accessible via active disclosure or whatever other mechanism is probably quite appropriate, and we can look into that.
Thanks. Well, in that case, I think I'd like to move an amendment, if that's possible, to add a 6.1K. And it would read something like this: a register of council's lessees will be kept, including the address and the amount, and the register will be made available upon request for inspection at a public office of the council.
Are you asking the mover and seconder to accept that, or would you like to propose an amendment?
I would like to ask the mover and seconder if they think that's a good idea.
Councillors Street and Reid.
Absolutely, no thought to it, and so on that basis, I'm not going to.
No, I can't agree to amend because I haven't given any thought to it, acting there.
Sorry, is that the full? That's not the full text, is it?
No. So the full text that I just read out, and I've just kind of made it up now, is a register of the council's lessees will be kept, including the address and the amount. And the register will be made available upon request for inspection at a public office of the council.
That's just the typical wording they use for it's a register available for inspection. I'd be happy to hear from staff or the general manager if they think it's a good idea or not.
Would you like to make a comment, general manager?
If I could, through you, acting mayor, councillor Cordova, I understand where you're coming from, but the dilemma, as I see it, is that if that were to be added tonight, we don't know what impact that might have on some of the existing leasing and licensing arrangements that the council have, some of which in the past have not been in open session, for example. I think we would have to take that on notice as a question, to be quite honest.
If I might just comment, Acting Mayor, so I think the idea is that there could be some legacy ones where the, you know, insert name of organisation here gets a really, really great deal, and a very exact equivalent organisation who's a bit newer doesn't get a good deal. And I think in the objective of the whole policy is transparency, and I think it would make eminent sense to just have that available upon inspection. I'd be happy to kind of grandfather it in and say, well, from now on we'll do it, but in fact that kind of... Yeah, what I'm talking about is just meeting the objective of transparency, so I think we should
do it. Would you like to move an amendment?
I would like to, yes.
Do we have a seconder for Councillor Cordova's amendment? Seconded by Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova, would you like to speak to the amendment?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. There is a possibility that, firstly, Council provides peppercorn rents to some wonderful organisations, and I think those should be celebrated, and we should really pay homage to the great work that those organisations do. And also, I think Council should get some credit for really facilitating the capacity of those organisations. And then the second element of this is that we want to make sure that because the objective of the policy is to have transparency, that we actually put our money where our mouth is and have a transparent register that's available upon request for inspection at a public office of the council. And that way I feel like all the great community organisations will be able to see what's going on. I think the public will be able to see what great work the council does in facilitating the capacity building of local organisations, and it will just be transparent, which is the objective of the policy. So that's why I'm proud to move this amendment. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Bastone on the amendment.
Yes, to the amendment. This is the basis of the question that I asked in closed session and was not able to get an answer on, was about rent and things. Not everything we do is obviously peppercorn, things like Drew Point, the cafe and things there, I think are commercial in confidence, as was the question that I asked. And, you know, I haven't been able to get an answer yet. I'm not sure that, as I said, some things are commercial in confidence, the things like Rain and Horn. I think that perhaps those things, peppercorn rent is different, but our actual commercial properties, I'm not sure that people should know.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Can I say at the outset that I fully support the idea of transparency and openness in those matters. My only point is this. I haven't considered this in any detail, this idea, and so I'm not prepared to support the amendment this evening. What I would suggest is that I would be prepared to look at an amendment to the policy subsequent, when I've had an opportunity to consider matters of commercial in confidence, matters that were in, the general manager makes a good point, I think, in relation to matters that were considered in closed session, and the implications that it would have for those as well. I'm not saying absolutely no, I'm saying it's a big change to make to the policy. And I'd appreciate the opportunity to consider it in more detail. So that's the only reason that I'll vote against it this evening.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Fox.
I'm feeling quite uncomfortable about the fact that many of our public assets are actually being dealt with confidentially and behind closed doors. I think it's very important for the community to know how our public assets are being used, and that they all have equal opportunity to either apply to rent them or see that they are used to the best advantage for the community. Whether in the past there have been confidential agreements or not, I think this is a policy that should be looking to the future. And when, for example, we have lease reviews, that information should also be public, so that the person who originally might have leased a building a long time ago when there wasn't a demand for it, as they keep renewing the lease, that somebody else has an opportunity to outbid them, or even to have the matter open and above board so that everybody can see how much they are paying and that it is to the benefit of that particular building, or that the building isn't being allowed to run down, for example, as our council asset. I think it's a very worthy amendment worth considering. That's why I've seconded it. And I thought by reading this policy that a lot of it is about transparency and openness. Why is it transparent and open about some things and not all things? It does concern me. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I also support the transparency, but like Councillor Street, I'd need more information in regards to fully support this motion, and perhaps if staff could do some research in regards to the legal advice perhaps regarding this, and perhaps what other councils do in this instance. I would like some further information in regards to that. Otherwise, I think the intent of it is important.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Reid.
Thank you. Like a couple of the others that have spoken, the intent of the amendment, I think, is very sound, but I would like some further information from staff on that. But it also does lead me to consider, and we had the discussion earlier about not-for-profit organisations and what our policies are in relation to that, and it makes me think whether we need an actual, whilst this leasing and licensing policy touches on it, we don't actually have a standalone policy in relation to leases to non-profit organisations. And if you look at the Hobart City Council, they have like a 6-page one which goes through things like the capacity of the organisation to pay and so on and so forth. So I just want to foreshadow that maybe that is something that we should also be considering at, to get that level playing field across not-for-profits, because there are varying degrees of ones in terms of size and capacity to pay. There are ones that get huge amounts of government support. There are others that don't get any government support. So it's not kind of a level playing field when it comes to not-for-profits. So it's kind of a segue I've gone off there, but it is something that I think we need to work on for the future to make sure that we have that equitable situation within the not-for-profit area. So, look, I thank Councillor Cordova for bringing the amendment. I'd hope we can get some further advice on it, so I won't be supporting it, but I support the intent, and I would like to see us do more work on the not-for-profit space.
Thank you, Councillor Reach. Like most of my colleagues have expressed, I also support the principle of transparency, but I don't feel comfortable supporting this amendment on the run. I would need some time to consider the commercial in confidence issues. There are a number of decisions Council does make in closed session, and there are valid reasons for that. We get 4 days to consider our agenda papers and ask questions of staff and receive advice before we make a decision, and likewise I would not feel comfortable to support this amendment at this point in time, but I do support the sentiment. Councillor Cordova, would you like to sum up on the amendment?
Yes, thank you. I think this has been a really robust debate, and I'll just foreshadow now that because this is our opportunity and we don't want to have to wait 5 years, everybody's shown some interest in chatting about it, I'm going to foreshadow that if the amendment fails, and I totally understand the reason why it might, I'd like to move to defer this policy until a report is provided by Council. And the reason for that is that way we don't have to wait 5 years. We're in no rush, I think, to pass it. but there's some legitimate questions that have been raised by Councillor Reid and I think myself. The more I actually think about this, the more I think that commercial entities are probably the main reason why we should have transparency, actually. I think that commercial ones are even more important. The examples of cafes or real estate agencies or what have you, these are community funds, they're community assets, and the objective of the policy is to be transparent. It obviously requires due consideration, and I would love us to consider that. I would love for council staff to develop some thought on that and then bring it back to us in future weeks so that we can consider it. The idea about letting the community know who gets what and why is the fair way to do it. It's the transparent way to do it, both for not-for-profits and, I think, especially for commercial entities, considering these are community assets we're talking about here. I think it makes eminent sense to look into this, and so I understand the trepidation about not wanting to do it tonight, but if that's the case, let's not wait 5 years for another review. Let's please defer this and then bring it back with a report that considers these issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. So we have an amendment moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
Aye.
We have a division. Those in favour, please raise your hands. Councillor Cordova and Councillor Fox. All those against? Councillors Street, Bastone, Reet, Midgley, Wass and Westwood. The amendment is lost. Councillor Cordova, you did foreshadow
a motion to defer this until a report is until it comes back with a report or some answers about what we've talked about tonight, so we can reconsider it before 5 years.
Okay, motion to defer, seconded by Councillor Midgley.
I think there's a point of order here. He's put the amendment. The amendment is lost. You can't have your cake and eat it too. I would be happy to discuss it later on. And I think if that's the case, if this council wants to discuss it, we will. But to have an amendment lost, you can't defer it. It's lost.
We defer the original motion, not the amendment.
I might seek some advice from the General Manager.
So again, point of order, because he has spoken to the motion.
Should we... a deferral moved by Councillor Reid?
Yep, I move that this matter be deferred until such time as we have a further report, as just discussed.
And seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour for a deferral, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? The motion is deferred. That brings us to confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. On page 159, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. We have a recommendation that in accordance with the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes and applications for leave of absence. Do I have a mover and a seconder? Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Council will now move into closed session, and the open session of Council adjourns at 7:31 p.m.